Hey, everybody, it's Sunny. I am just letting you know that you're listening on the iTunes feed. Go sign up at the Patreon, subbeacon.com. You'll easily find us. We are talking, it's me and Vic and Matt Continetti sitting in for JBL this week, talking about the Northmen and some other stuff. So go check that out. Listen to this episode. Up this week, we're going to be talking about Doctor Strange, Vic going back to the multiverse. Very scary. Who knows if he'll make it through the episode. And, you know, but you got to talk about it because it's a huge hit. Grossed $500 million so far. Everybody wants to see that. So, anyway, go sign up at the Patreon. That way you get the episodes live as they air instead of 2 weeks later. I mean, the Northmen, Northmen's not even in theaters anymore. You're way behind the times here. So go sign up.
I will avenge you, father. I will save you, mother. I will kill you if you live.
Why would he stow away to such a hellish place?
To find what was stolen from me.
And what is that?
The kingdom. You must choose between kindness for your kin or hate for your enemies.
Your strength breaks men's bones. I have the cunning to break their minds.
And night by night, we will carry out my pledge of vengeance. I will avenge you, father.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Subbeacon. I'm Victor Mattis along with Sunny Bunch. And subbing for Jonathan Vilas this week is our good friend Matt Continetti, resident scholar at the American Enterprise Institute and author of The Right, The 100-Year War for American Conservatism in bookstores. Now, Sunny's holding a copy of the book.
I got a copy right here. I haven't read it yet, Matt.
Oh, I haven't
read it yet. Is it good? Should I read this? Is it good?
Okay. Before we get to that, just a reminder, the Subbeacon is now available through Patreon. Go to subbeacon.com. You'll easily find us. Please subscribe, tell your friends, and don't forget about the Subbeacon merchandise store at tpublic.com. Welcome back to the show, Matt. New book.
Thank you for having me. I'm actually a little bit pleased and excited because it's apparently the only way I get invited back on the Subbeacon is to write a book.
So we'll see you in a couple of years.
It's been about three years since I've been on.
Yeah.
And
it all worked out.
I have the book out, and so I'll get to work on my next book, and then I'll see you guys when it comes out a couple years.
What I want you to do, Matt, is just watch your numbers on Amazon when the show comes out tomorrow, on Friday morning. And check around like 10 a.m. and you're going to see a big difference.
Huge.
You're going to see the number of one star reviews are suddenly going to proliferate.
Yeah, exploding. Yeah.
Sonny, you had a question for Matt about
the
book.
We've got great loyal listeners. Oh, I'm sure they'll support you. I haven't read it yet because I've had to read books for Bulwark Goes to Hollywood like three times of the last five episodes I've done. So I didn't get an advanced reader's copy for some reason. I didn't get a press copy.
Where's the Atma special episode on Ronald Reagan's film career?
You know, that's I don't think that's for Bonzo.
Yeah, exactly.
That would be good.
You know? But you know what, Vic? I will just say, Sonny actually purchased his copy. And so I'm very, very pleased with
him. Okay, are you trying to tell me something?
I'm trying to guilt you into buying some copies. You're waiting for the free copies at the book party.
You know what? You'll be surprised, Matt. The number of cheapskates in our office who keep asking, when are we getting the free copies of Matt's book? I said, I don't think it works that way. And I used to think it worked that way until I had my own book. And I was so offended when people asked me for a free copy of the book. It's like, I want you to buy the book. What?
You know, all my author copies are gone. Basic sent me 24 author copies. I have one left. And because in this instance, this is my third book. With this book, I was like Oprah giving away cars. I wanted everyone to have
a
copy of my book.
You
get the right, because I wanted to spread the word as much as possible before publication.
Yes, yeah.
So I was handing out free books, and they had
to the influencers. You handed them out to the influencers.
Anybody, men on the street, who knows? Anyone can be an influencer today, Vic. Everyone has a Substack. Yeah, you know,
and who knows? Everybody has a Substack.
Far-reaching it is. Yes, I was just giving out books to everybody, and they're free. So you can't come across free books, but I have extra respect for people who purchase a copy. And Sonny actually notified me. The minute that he did,
he captured
it. And
Matt, look,
to me.
I bought your book.
I said, that's a friend.
You know what?
You know, some of us.
Sure, you haven't had me on your show in 3 years.
Some of us try to support our friends.
Sure, you left me in the lurch at the Free Beacon in 2019 and ruined my life.
But
you bought my book.
Point.
What? First off, for the record, we're going to pull back the curtain here a little
and
bit.
Think about those
you
choices.
You were already leaving.
Think about those choices.
You were already
choices
leaving.
I was?
You were already leaving the Free Beacon by the time I told you. I heard you were getting out. I was like, I got to go. I can't let.
You both abandoned
me.
You both abandoned me.
Yeah, Vic is still there.
We've suckered Vic here. Now we both got to get out.
You got to get out. Now that I'm here.
Get out while the getting's good.
Now you can leave.
No, you. You were like, you had 2 feet out the door, and I was like, fuck, I gotta, you know, I'm not gonna last here.
All right.
I'm not gonna
I guess I misremember it.
I wanna just show people for the record, well, you guys, since the listeners can't see it. Here's one copy of Vodka. Here's what it says on the inscription page. To Sonny Bunch, I so look forward to signing the book you promised to order on Amazon. And then here's copy number two, dated 1 month later, to Sonny Bunch. Meh. Okay. Thanks for buying the book.
Those were the days.
Vic was disillusioned by that
That's
point
right.
When he got this second
copy.
I got the
You know what I have, Matt? I have a copy of your book, Rhythm. I already have the paperback edition to your book, The Right. Now, it says galley proof for some reason, but it's really a paperback.
Don't go selling that on the market, you know, Vic. That's
we
legal.
We used to do that. We used to do that, you know, back in the day.
Well, not the paperback, not the galley.
We sold whatever
they
took. We sold whatever they took. Many a fine lunch at Morton's. It's not like those bucks.
Backroom deals on galleys financing Morton's
extravagance. That's right. Matt, now let me ask you, have you done any... you're going to be doing some traveling for the book, I assume, promotions stuff?
A little bit, mm-hmm. Vic, but really as a result of the pandemic and also I think just general budget cuts, they don't really have do book tours anymore. Basically, my day since a week before publication, so basically for the past 3 weeks or so, my day has consisted of going into my office, sitting down, and appearing on podcasts for about 8 hours straight.
Two.
Sometimes I have breaks where I go and I do a cable news hit.
I saw you on Fox the other day.
So that's kind of my day. And then I end my day and I come home and I kind of collapse into a heap, except on days where I have to stay up until 9:30 p.m. Eastern time to record an episode of my favorite podcast, The Sub-Beacon.
Wait till you wrap things
I'm
up.
That dedicated.
Wait till you wrap things up at 11 p.m., Matt. Then you'll really love us.
I'm sorry. Sorry.
Mr.
You
Central Standard
Central Time.
Mr. Central,
Central Time Imperialism
people.
Here.
That's ridiculous out there in
you,
CST.
You tape the show and then you go to bed and you live your life. Meanwhile, I'm up till like midnight record. I'm editing. I'm putting all the files together. You know, some of us have to do.
Don't you just press
real
a button?
Word no,
I don't actually
show.
Do the podcast. You just
I
press
wish.
A button, right? That's how it works.
I wish.
Sonny, how are you? What's going on?
I'm fine.
Yeah.
I'm
what's happened? What's new in your life?
Not a whole lot. I was excited to talk to Matt. I guess we'll get to Matt and his Disney World adventure.
Oh.
Because Matt also went to Disney World. Vic,
I went
you weren't here last week.
2 weeks before Sonny did.
Yeah.
Oh, that's
you weren't
right.
here last week, Vic. So you missed my whole Disney World spiel. But I'm excited to get Matt's take on it. Because I have to say, I as I said last week, I was a skeptic. I'm a skeptic of Disney. I've never been a Disney person. I've never quite gotten it. But after spending, you know, 4 days there, three days, four nights, I was like, I get it. I get it.
Yeah.
It's good.
You know, you could have had Jod Podhoretz on. Little unbeknownst.
One of America's foremost intellectual/Disney fan.
So Jod Podhoretz told me that he has been to Disney somewhere around 13 times, but he didn't start going until the age of 40.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. He was like 46 or something. So the 13 times.
The distribution of visits.
Yes. Also,
so impressive to me.
The 13 times does not include with his family. That's just him alone.
Go. No, right. We only have to add.
Oh yeah, trips yeah, yeah.
Where the wife.
Did either of you consider going to Epcot? And is that a thing anymore? Going to Epcot?
I went. Sonny, did you go to Epcot?
I did not go to Epcot.
Oh really? I thought with your daughter might have been interested in the Frozen ride, which is there. We did spend an afternoon in Epcot.
Is it now? And, because I went there.
It was
80s and early 90s, and I don't know. Is it still the same?
It's different in the sense that when, you know, I first went to Disney World in 1988, mm-hmm. I think, 87 or 88. Then Epcot, the big attraction was the Exxon Mobil ride.
Yes.
Where you saw the dinosaurs. It was called like World of Energy.
Yes.
That,
what the dinosaurs now, became.
Did you watch them liquefy?
You know, you eventually like ended up, yeah, like tarp.
Right,
and
right.
Coal.
That's right.
At the, but that has become, and I know Subbeacon listeners will correct me if I'm wrong. I'm pretty sure that's become the pavilion where the great ride called Soarin' is now, where you kind of glide over the world, and it's an incredible.
Well, not Soarin'.
Soarin'. It's Soarin'. Mm-hmm. I was gonna say that's a New Line movie.
So
that's
Epcot has some good rides.
Oh.
But it is by far the worst designed of the parks
because it's going in different directions, and so you got to keep on doubling back.
And it has a huge lagoon in the center of it, so you have to walk just miles, or it seems like miles, to get anywhere.
That's my memory.
And then the second thing is because it has the World Pavilion; it has all the different national communities.
That's what I think is interesting.
It is interesting, but you know what that means? Party time.
Yes.
So there are so many drunk people at Epcot.
Like I said, this is what...
And now, you know, they started introducing that you could drink in the other parks slowly but surely. So it was interesting because we started... I don't know how Sonny structured his trip, but for us, we did Magic Kingdom first. And there the drinking is pretty light, mainly because it is...
It's only in the restaurants.
It's only in restaurants. And, you know, it's mainly young kids.
It's not like an open container. It's not like Bourbon Street or anything.
Then I spend a day at Hollywood Studios. You see a little bit more of it, you know, a little bit more of the party animals types. But at the time we reached Epcot on our final afternoon, I mean, it was like spring break.
Wow.
Orlando style. Okay. Yeah, just crazy.
Well, now I really got to go.
Shocking.
I don't think my secret
booked your ticket yet?
I'm actually telling my wife I'm going to Vegas. But the truth is, I'm going to Epcot.
Well, it has a Vegas quality because of these pavilions, you know, and like you go to the France Pavilion, and that has the Ratatouille ride, which is quite good.
Okay,
so it's weird. Yeah. Like Epcot has good rides, I went
to the Hofbrauhaus. I remember going to the Hofbrauhaus in Germany.
That's great. Yeah. And then the Nordic Pavilion, which I think is a Swedish pavilion, which has the Frozen ride.
Would be Frozen, yes.
They also have some, you know, Scandinavian candy or whatever, you know, they call it Scandinavian, who knows, but that was very good. And so you have fun at Epcot. It's just
noticed more drunks.
It's a more adult experience. Yes.
That's very much how I felt in Hollywood Studios. So we did Magic Kingdom, Hollywood Studios, and then back to Magic Kingdom. Mm-hmm. We did 2 days of Magic Kingdom.
I think you need 2 days of Magic Kingdom, actually.
To get everything, I think you basically...
Yes.
But the... But it was definitely a very different vibe. I mean, like, it's like you say in Magic Kingdom, there's no drinking outdoors really anywhere. But at Hollywood Studios, it's like every 200 yards or so, there's another like stand, like a frozen drink stand,
or
you go into Galaxy's Edge and it's like get the blue milk with rum.
Get the blue milk.
It's like okay.
Oh, you mean like from Star Wars?
Did you like Galaxy's Edge, Sonny?
Well, Galaxy's Edge, I mean, it's so in Hollywood Studios, I actually think the Toy Story area is the best designed of those areas.
Completely agree. Completely agree.
It's great. I mean, Galaxy's Edge was neat, and it's got like a lot of, you know, nice details and stuff. It's definitely very sequels focused.
Yes. Like... Well, that was my big point of contention, because I was saying to my wife, I said, I don't like this place. I don't like it. I don't like it. I don't like what's going on here. And she said to me correctly, this is because she goes, you want the Star Wars when you grew up.
4, 5, 6.
You want the original trilogy. You want to go into a world that's the original trilogy. Yeah. So like the Star Tours ride, which has been there for decades, we went on twice.
I like that. I've done that.
My kids loved that ride.
Even though
it's not part of Galaxy's Edge.
But even though Star Tours has been updated for the sequels now.
Yeah, yeah, like, no, they have different elements.
You don't do the Death Star run. You go to the Salt Planet from The Last Jedi.
There are a bunch of different simulations. Yeah, but Darth Vader's in there and stuff like that. But nonetheless, I preferred Star Tours to Galaxy's Edge because it was just too sequels to me. I liked Avatar. I liked Pandora.
That's what John Podhoretz is saying.
I thought that was much cooler.
He says it's the most amazing ride ever.
Flights of Passage, by far my whole family's favorite.
How many
ride,
hours did you have to wait for that one? Or did you take an express?
Well, because we gamed the system, you know. We got the Disney Planner.
Nice.
Yeah. Not only does the Disney Planner tell you to do the lightning lanes, but you know, you have to have a strategy.
Yeah.
You know, it's like what Putin should have done before he invaded Ukraine. My wife and I, we sat down and we had a strategy. We mapped everything out before we went to Orlando, and then we would get up at before sunrise in order to be the first ones to book the ride.
Yes. Wow.
And you have to have that kind of mentality to have a successful trip. Yeah. And so as a result, the truth was we hardly waited.
That's nice.
In line.
Yeah.
Same.
That was us when we took the kids, but that was, you know, some years ago now. But I had the Disney app so you could monitor like what lines were short, which ones were long. Oh, yeah. Plus, we had the bands. Plus, we had the bands. But I remember, we were on our way to one ride, and then my daughter, she was like 3 or 4, needs to use the bathroom. I'm like, it's killing me. Just like I'm seeing the lines grow. What was the longest? What line did you have to wait on the longest, both of you? What ride?
What do you think?
So I would say the longest ride that we actually stood in, like to wait in. Mm-hmm. Was probably either Jungle Cruise. We waited about 40 minutes for that, or the Big Mountain Thunder Railroad.
Oh, Thunder Mountain Railroad. That's a great one.
Thunder Mountain Railroad. Yeah. That one was about 40 minutes. It was like both of them were probably about 35 to 40 minutes.
So I would say I agree that Jungle Cruise was a ridiculously long line, even with the. I don't know if we had a lightning lanes on that one, but we had the Disney Plus, which is the second tier lightning lane, and not worth it. Not worth it.
Yeah.
Because, you know, it's interesting because, you know, when I was 8 and went to Disney in the first time in the 1980s, Jungle Cruise was cool.
Oh, look,
the animals move.
Yeah. You know?
But now they have a whole park, Animal Kingdom. And the animals
actual
are real.
Animals.
And you're in that safari that, you know, you feel like you're in Jurassic Park and it's going up and down and you see the train. So Jungle Cruise was very disappointing. Mm. The other ride that I think we waited the longest in, though, they do all these things to make you think that you're not waiting in line, was Rise of the Resistance, the Star Wars ride. And even that was a lightning lane and we got, you know, we didn't have to wait at the outset. Right, because for the wait time for that, for people who don't have the special passes, is up to 3 hours.
Yeah, like 2.5, 3 hours.
Yeah,
that's your day. And you spend a lot of money to get into there, and then you spend
It's just not worth it. But when we got in, we still had to wait.
I disagree. Rise of the Resistance is probably the best of the like experience rides for me. I mean, I like.
What are
like,
you
it's
riding?
Like the most immersive.
What are you riding?
I mean, it's kind of like Star Tours.
It's not a Millennium Falcon.
It actually moves around.
Oh, it's a story. You're part of the story.
Yeah.
And you have to escape a First Order cruiser. Here's my thing. This is my problem with Galaxy's Edge. I don't like the immersion. Okay.
You don't like the immersion.
I don't like the immersion. I want the Disney people to know their place. They are the cast members. They are helping us.
Did you get grief from the Empire guys? Were they talking shit to you?
Totally.
What?
Totally. And I just, it kind of,
How dare you?
Really pissed me off. But then more, it's like even the photographer. We had a photographer who kind of came up to me and we just wanted a photo with the family in front of the Millennium Falcon. And the photographer looks at me and goes, "What planet are you from?" You know, I said, I'm from this one. Oh. And they said, "You're from Batu."
No.
So no, I'm not from. No. Come on.
So you don't want to be in character,
no,
is what you're saying.
I'm not a character.
You need to enjoy the illusion.
It's not an illusion.
Stop being such a grumpy old man. That's what you
I
need.
Know where I am.
How dare you? How dare you? I like the illusion. I want to be immersed. Immerse me.
You should go to that new hotel then. The the Star Cruiser.
Yes,
you heard about that?
Oh, yeah. Totally in character.
Yeah. Totally in character.
Totally in character.
Not for me.
I will say that it's been very interesting in the weeks following our trip, because my 6-year-old daughter has gotten totally into Star Wars.
Oh,
like
boy.
We're watching the old Droids cartoon on Disney Plus.
Yeah, it's on there.
Because she built a droid, right? We did right. the build a droid thing. Oh. She built a droid, and so she's totally into that. She like from her library at school, she got like a little droid book to read up on the droids. She was trying
That's
to explain
great.
To us how a lightsaber is made. I was like, I know about the kyber crystals. All right. I know all about the kyber crystals. Come on. You can't stump me, kid.
They made droids, but not the lightsabers, because you can
they
build
did,
your
They did. Yeah, we did the droid. We were going to have both of them do the droids, but Charlie's too little. Mm-hmm.
Do you have to be on the side of the rebellion throughout the entire experience? Are there any options to be either bounty hunter or with the Empire?
Well, Vic, you know, you could be whoever you
oh,
want to
really?
Be.
Oh, really? Like, so I could do
yes,
that?
But it's not really. The ride oh. is structured in such a way uh-huh. that you're kind of yeah. part of yeah. the resistance.
Yeah, and it's called Rise
caught,
of the Resistance.
Yeah, you're caught yeah, on the First that's Order exactly ship, like, and then yeah, they basically rescue you. But, forget you know, that. You in your own mind.
Oh, I could be imagining that I'm,
whatever.
You know.
Double A.
Yeah, order, I'm carrying out Order 66.
They have, speaking of bars, they have the... They have this immersive bar called Olga's Cantina, uh-huh. which is designed like the Star Wars Cantina.
Oh, like Mos Eisley, yeah.
And you go in there, and it's all this weird music and lights and everything. And they have some animatronic aliens, but not as many as I would have liked. But yeah, I mean,
not
they're
as many
to make
as
you
I
think,
would have.
No,
liked.
No, I needed more. You know, I needed more. But they try to get you into that.
Yeah.
So you know, Vic, you could imagine. When you go there, that you're about to. Eat,
oh right, and I'll do my thing with my.
It's all up to you,
yeah.
You know, and
my Wookiee pelts.
The, yeah, and the cast members there, they would you know indulge your fantasy.
And I don't think
like
they're
Ricardo Montalban would
yeah,
say.
Yeah, that's right. Thank you.
Your fantasy.
Yeah, I'd go to that island. By the way, that's where I'm
going.
Forget
going
about
to
Disney.
Jabba's palace. Well, and
well, they
watch,
shut
watch
down
some dancers.
You know, they shut down the Pleasure Island. That was the big thing.
Oh,
when
yeah.
I was a kid.
That became, I guess that's migrated to Epcot then in terms of the drinking and
yes.
everything.
No, yes. And they've incorporated parts of it.
Yeah, it was
but
a
they
big
used
party.
To have that island there in the lagoon.
Yeah.
Called Pleasure Island, which was a big thing for adults. And I even remember as a kid, I was like, oh, wow, that's like.
Yeah.
Kind of like the red light district at Disney. But they've
well, it was Disney with alcohol.
It's interesting. It they shut that down and then they spread it all over the park. And so it's kind of
what is there now?
America,
what know, is there so. Now? Because I remember walking by there. What is where that used to be now? Pleasure Island? Nothing?
I think it's abandoned. Yeah.
Okay.
It's just a kind of an island that's in the middle of the Seven Seas Lagoon, I think is the
okay.
one. There are two.
Yes.
Of course, you know, it's all going to be erased by Ron DeSantis in a couple of years anyway. So
well, don't
I hope
worry.
I hope you enjoyed it. While
you know, the illusion's going to be broken when the Osceola County, you know, people
yeah,
have to put
yeah,
the,
yeah.
fill in potholes.
The waste reclamation department of Osceola
totally
and Orange County.
Ruined the illusion.
You know, you got like people like you know, Mo Sizlak going, get out of this street.
Mo Sizlak. Yeah, that's right. Okay. All right. Good. Well. I thank you for asking. I'm doing fine. So that's my script here. I say, oh, thanks for asking. I'm doing fine.
Vic, how are you
oh,
doing?
Oh, sorry. Thank you. Well,
how
that's usually
doing?
JVL will say that, right? And he's out this week. So I'm okay. You know, I'm obsessed with not wasting food. Right. This is getting crazy now. I don't know, because you have kids. Whatever's left on the table, I hate to throw it away. I'm eating everything. You know, everyone comes to me at the end.
Oh,
not you, Sonny.
Healthy.
It's not healthy. No,
it isn't healthy.
It's not good.
It isn't healthy.
Absolutely not. And first of all, I'm not. I don't want to eat their disgusting picked over.
Yeah, it depends.
Leftover like mac and cheese. Yeah,
but
whatever.
If it's like I don't know, meat is meat. That's what I say. And
half a steak.
Yeah, I don't know. Meat. Absolutely. You know everything. But it's gotten so crazy. So, like over Easter. We went to my brother-in-law, Captain Bill Dwyer's, and Kate had to bring over a salad, which was fine. And but she overbought, and she got these two giant boxes from Whole Foods. It's like, you know, a box of like mixed greens, you know, summer greens, these enormous boxes. We used one, but there's a whole other box. So there it is. And it's getting old because that was Easter, and I'm still eating salad almost every day. And it's making me sick.
But that's healthy.
You know, they say, oh, you can't
you're overeating.
Well, they're saying, you know, they do say.
I mean, you're not saying the salad is rotten.
Not when it's all turned brown.
No, it's getting wilty. It's getting wilty.
You can't eat that.
Insects crawling out of it.
No, not yet. Not yet. But, you know, it's like when they say, oh, you can't have enough salad. Yes, you can. Yes, you can. I'll just put I'm turning into a salad shooter, if you know what I mean.
Well, that is one consequence
and then,
of that
and then,
diet.
And then,
yes.
And then on Saturday night, we go over to my in-laws, their apartment, and my mother-in-law makes this like it was an apple crisp with caramel on top, and the whole thing. It was delicious. Everybody loved it. And there's some oatmeal to the whole thing. Anyway, she just said, "Take the rest of it home. Nobody wants to eat it now, and it's mine." And I just finished it yesterday, and it was no longer crisp. It was like mush. I was eating mush. And
you're like Homer Simpson,
but
with
it's tasty.
I know.
It was tasty. It tasted like
sugary.
It tasted like the oatmeal cinnamon, you know, Quaker Oats oatmeal, the sugary and cinnamony. And
sounds good.
I finished it, but my insides have gone completely berserk. Speaking of which, over the weekend, The Northman came in fourth place with $12.3 million behind Fantastic Beasts: The Secrets of Dumbledore. With $14 million, and in second place, Sonic the Hedgehog 2 with $15.7 million, and in first place, a movie called The Bad Guys with $24 million. Box office thoughts. Do either of you, did you know what The Bad Guys were?
Yeah, I mean, I knew it was an animated movie from DreamWorks, I think, that I'm not going to go see.
Yeah.
My kids saw it.
Oh, I was going to say, did your kids
watch it? Yeah, my kids saw it. Yeah, they liked it. They loved it.
What theater do you guys go to?
Mainly the Tyson's Corner movie theater, which is pretty close.
That's
to
a
us.
Big one.
But, you know, just listening to those numbers, it just reminds me of the power of the family market, right?
Yeah.
I mean... And a kid movie, you still want to take your kids to the movies what else are you going
to
do?
Yeah, it's a good way to kill time.
You need to find some way to kill time, and the kids want to go. You know, I think the Bad Guys is based on a book series actually, and so they were familiar with it and they enjoyed it.
No, the family market is still there. I mean, the Sonic sequel, the first Sonic did surprisingly well. The second one did huge numbers. People wanted to go see it. Sing 2 grossed like $160 or $170 million,
that's
something
crazy.
Like that, which is a very big number for that, because it opened, I wouldn't say it opened soft, because it opened like right during the Omicron surge or whatever, right? But it opened to about $20 million, something like that. So it really hung around for a long
time. People liked Sing 2.
People like those dumb
kids.
Sing movies.
The McCormicks were telling me I need to see that movie.
Well, that sounds about right. Well, you would actually probably like it because it's got a lot of songs you would recognize.
Well, it's got Bono.
That's what Lauren McCormick said. She said it's got Bono. I'd love it. I said, okay. When are we going?
Yeah, but The Northman came in fourth.
What
it came in ahead.
It's
I'm a little
bad.
Bit surprised that it came in ahead of the Unbearable Weight of Massive Talent, the new Nicolas Cage movie.
That was
I'm surprised. I'm actually a little bit surprised. By that.
You were disappointed by that movie, which we're not discussing.
I did not. Yeah, I didn't love it. Maybe we'll do it next week.
Clearly nobody liked it. I mean,
lots, but see, this is not true. Lots and lots of people liked it. It's like 89% fresh on Rotten Tomatoes.
Yeah, I noticed it had a good Rotten Tomatoes score. I'm surprised to hear you didn't like it, Sonny.
Yeah, the Cinema Score was pretty good. It was either a B plus or an A minus from Cinema Score. People like it. People like this movie. I just didn't. Mm. It didn't work for me. And I was looking, I wouldn't say I was really looking forward to it, but I was looking forward to it. And did not work for me. But I will say that it's one of the few movies that I have like published a negative review on and gotten lots of pushback on Twitter. People like, no, this movie's funny. How dare you? Oh. Like, well, I'm sorry I don't have basic tastes like you. Scum, you rebel.
Wow.
Scum.
Sounds like I'm really gonna like this movie.
So anyway, Vic, you'll love it, I'm sure, because it's a very much a standard
good.
Studio.
Yeah,
comedy.
I don't have to think too
be,
hard.
You'll be very.
What happened to Morbius? Where did that go?
The movie was terrible.
What did it finish with? What did it finish? How badly did it finish?
It's not out of theaters yet, but it is almost. I mean, it is not playing at my local draft house. It was only on my local draft house's screens for I think 3 weekends, which is a very short run for a movie.
That's
like
not
this.
Good.
But it's the problem with that movie is that it's bad. It's a terrible movie. I mean, it just like nobody likes it. Nobody wants to go see it, and it's got bad word of mouth. And, you know, I guess it's not a box office disaster because it only cost $75 million to make or something like
shows.
That, $80 million. But I mean, it's not good. I mean, it's not a good movie.
And next weekend is a big one though, isn't it? Isn't Doctor Strange, isn't that next weekend or no?
Doctor Strange opens next weekend. Yeah.
That'll be a big one.
I saw a report today that they've already sold $44 or $42 million worth of tickets. So
and that's the latest Marvel after Spider-Man.
Yeah, it's the first proper MCU movie.
Have you seen it already, Sonny?
I have not seen it yet. I see it on Monday.
Okay,
I actually see it on Monday. So
well, I'm looking forward to it as long as there's not a lot of CGI or any talk about like alternative universes and metaverses.
No, it's a very simple plot.
No, it's Doctor Strange and the one universe. Of normalcy. Yeah.
I better just see one of him. That's
what
I'm going to say. If I see a clone, I'm walking out of the theater. If I see
just,
one clone.
I'm out.
I'm done. I'm cloned out. You,
well, it's
you
directed by, it's directed by Sam Raimi, though. Come on, Sam Raimi.
Oh, that's good.
Everybody
it's
loves
a return.
Sam Raimi.
It's a return of the... Good. Well, maybe it'll be a simple
It
plot.
Can't be as bad as the Eternals, though.
Oh, nothing beats the badness of that movie.
I could not. I've thought of myself as a Marvel completist, but I started the Eternals on Disney+. I did not get 4 minutes into
wow.
that thing.
Wow.
No,
but you didn't finish it? You didn't finish the Eternals?
I didn't even really begin it.
How
that
are you
first
gonna...
scene was so ludicrous.
How are you going to
see
it?
You think the first scene's ludicrous, but you should see the last scene.
Well, that's... I mean...
Just the hand that comes out of the earth.
Are you going to be able to follow the adventures of the Marvel Cinematic Universe?
Oh, okay. All right. If Kevin Feige is intelligent, and I think he is, I think the Eternals is going to kind of...
Yeah, we'll see what happens.
Okay. Decide.
So this week we're talking about it. Robert. I was going to say Andrew Eger. Robert Eggers.
Andrew Eggers.
He's so talented. Robert Eggers, The Northman. Sonny, how about a big boy review? Do it in Old Norse.
I have to pull up the IMDb because I cannot remember the character names of anybody.
When in doubt,
in
Bjorn.
This show.
Bjorn.
Robert Eggers previously made The Witch, which I like a lot, and The Lighthouse, which I thought was okay. I didn't like it as much as some critics, but definitely not a Vic movie. Definitely not. So Alexander Skarsgård plays basically the original Hamlet. This is loosely based on the story that. Hamlet is loosely based on he's a guy named Amleth who his father is played by Ethan Hawke.
I didn't realize that.
Omelet, Western omelet.
Okay, go ahead.
The story begins before he is an adult. It's as a child. His father, who's played by Ethan Hawke, is killed by his uncle Fjolnir. And Fjolnir takes away his mother into, you know, bondage, kills everybody in the village.
Can I interrupt you really briefly here?
Yes.
I promise. Just one bit because I'm going to forget about it. I just want to say, did you hear Ethan Hawke, you know, in order to get into it all, they said you can't bathe for a month. They said, okay, so normal then.
Yes, it's just normal. It's just normal, Ethan Hawke.
Don't brush your teeth for a month. Okay, so, all right, cool.
Looked about the same.
Acting? You call that acting?
It's method. It's
go
method.
Ahead. Go ahead. Sorry.
It's just him normally. So he looks the same on Moon Knight.
Yeah.
I don't know if you guys are watching Moon Knight.
Yeah. Same. He hadn't shampooed his hair since then. Okay.
All right, so Fjolnir kills everybody that Amlet knows, including poor Willem Dafoe, who is the fool. He's the jester in the court of the king. Flash forward, 15 years or so, and Amlet is a wolf warrior, Nordic wolf warrior, part of the Rus.
Beowulf.
I guess, going to.
He's a berserker.
But the he in the course of sacking a village learns that Fjolnir has fled to Iceland and he's going to go there. He basically gets himself put into slavery to go to Iceland and be a part of Fjolnir's village, where the last half of the movie takes place. And I have complaints about this movie, most of them involving the pacing. This is an hour. This is a 135-minute movie, which is punctuated by moments of amazing and fantastic violence, which I'm sure this movie does very well on the violence portion of the quadrants. But just like great, sometimes vaguely ridiculous scenes. But there's that sacking of the village that I mentioned. There's like a deadly field hockey game that ends with Amlet headbutting a man to death, which is, I don't know if you've ever wanted to watch a man get headbutted to death, but you can do that in this movie. And then, the fight under the mound against the, wizard knight thing, the dead wizard knight who has the magic sword, right? Anyway, there's some great, interesting stuff. There's also some, like, totally insane stuff. There's a big sword fight on top of a volcano between Amlet and Fjolnir, right? That's the culminating battle. There are visions of Valkyries and, like, Amlet basically does the Yorick, alas, poor Yorick, I knew him well, scene.
Literally.
Talking to Willem Dafoe's skull.
Mm-hmm.
Bjork plays a crazy witch. There are lots of, like, great images in this movie, is what I'm saying. But the problem is they are stretched too far apart from each other. Mm. And the structure of the movie is just all wrong. It's built to be a chase film where Amlet escapes and then he spends the rest of his life trying to find Fjolnir, traveling across the ocean to get to him. And instead of, like, continuing to chase him and continuing to have to go to more places, it just stops in this little farm. You're just stuck in this farm for the last 70 minutes of the film. And it looks kind of cool, I guess, but it just the all of the forward momentum, it's like you hit a wall. So there are things I really liked about this. I don't think Alexander Skarsgård is quite as good an actor as, say, Nicole Kidman, who plays his mother in this, or Ethan Hawke, who hasn't bathed for a month. He's fine. He's very big. He's a huge, very big Nordic person. With his traps are about as big as my head. I don't know. I'm very curious to know what you made of it, Vic, because I kind of liked it, but also had a lot of problems with it. And I feel like it's a movie that you were either going to have loved or really hated.
I kind of loved it. A lot of those scenes are still lingering with me. And haunting would be a bad word. It's more like it delights me, it continues to delight me, thinking about certain ways people died in that movie. And I have to say, there were certain scenes. And, like, you wait, it's all about the payback, right? Because, this guy, the great injustice to him, he loses his family, he's on the run, these people did terrible things, and then he has to work his way back, and all these awful people who we remember, how is he going to get back at them? And very specifically, there were certain characters, the guy with the missing nose.
The guy with no nose, right?
The guy with no nose. I said, what's going to happen? I hope he doesn't just get stabbed and that's it. And no, I was not disappointed when Amleth takes his giant broadsword that only works at night in moonlight.
Yes. And can only take it out of the hilt.
Yes.
At night.
And points it at the guy's nose and says, remember this. And he says, remember that the kid who bit your nose off, he grew and he's hungry for more. And then he just drives slowly the sword into his face. And Matt, you would have loved it. And in the audience sitting there, I literally like made noises. And I was watching.
Wait, was it like a yeah, or was it like a,
did people call the police on you?
I sit in the back
and say, hold it, what's this man doing in here?
Making these groaning noises. No, I literally did. No, this is no joke. I was watching. I'm like, what's he? No, no. And then I just go, oh. That's all I said. It was like, oh, I was so impressed. That
did you make
would...
that noise earlier when Anya Taylor-Joy was, yeah, was on the screen?
I was going to make other jokes, but I'm not going to make these jokes. She's a weird one. We'll get to that in a second. Matt, you were going to say you were going to see this movie. You were thwarted. Yeah.
I was thwarted. I was so excited to be on the show after a 3-year hiatus.
He did all his homework.
I was doing my homework. I had booked my ticket. I was going to go to the theater, even though, as Vic kind of alluded to, this is not my type of movie. Extreme violence is not something I particularly care to watch. And so I was still going to go. To do the homework so I could give a review on the program this evening. When I'm on my way, literally, to the movie theater, when I get a call from my wife, who's in our new house. We tore down our old house and built a new house on top of it.
Oh, so we're looking at it right now. We're looking.
You're looking.
The live behind
my
you.
New
this
study.
Is like the new. Yeah, we have no
this
idea
my new
how
office.
Much bigger
yeah.
it is. Which is like.
But
okay.
So I'm talking to you from my new office. But so we've been in here. We've been in there for 6 days at this point. But she calls me and says, "You have to come home. There's a burst pipe."
No.
And there's water spilling
all over the
master bath, and it's leaking through the ceiling in the kitchen.
Oh, no.
So, welcome home, everybody, your new house. This is not uncommon. I've since learned for people who do this type of thing. But so I didn't get to see the movie because we had to deal with that crisis, which is under control.
What happened? So what actually happened?
Well, you know, Sonny, the plumbers who installed the plumbing, maybe they were just back from their lunch break or anything 6 months ago, but they'd forgot to glue the seal on the pipes in my vanity in the master bath.
Oh, man.
And so it was inevitable that they said, usually, you know, it could take 6 months to a year once they turn the water on for the water to just burst through the unsealed pipe. And in this case, it was at the, the closer end of that. So, it's been about 6 months or so since they've had the water on, a little bit less, 6 weeks or whatever. In any case, 6 days for us in the house before the water burst in the pipe. But when you shut down the water and then the plumber shows up that day. It's amazing. The plumber shows up that day and I'm like, well, how long is it going to take to fix the plumbing issue so we can restore the water? He's like, it's going to take 30 minutes. He goes up there, he seals it on, and he's like, okay, see you guys later. The water's back.
Well, did they?
But we still have to do repair work
I hope the people who messed up are,
Oh, yeah, no. No, yeah. I mean, we're not paying for any. It's
good.
Warranty. Warranty. Yeah. Gosh. It's a huge. But you know, it's going to cause us some inconvenience next week, which in the middle of the book promotion and everything is...
You have that.
Yeah, an inconvenience. But the most important consequence, I still believe,
you did not get to see
me not being able to see The Northman. And so so I could talk about it intelligently with you guys.
At the end of this, you'll have to let us know if we've talked you into it.
Yeah, that's right. Okay.
I would say you have not.
Okay, hold on.
I would say that just your description of the plot and what you enjoyed about the movie. It says to me that it'll probably be something I don't watch.
Now, hold on, because I do have a quadrant score, so this may convince you. Okay,
sure.
So for the plot is pretty much an A. It was very straightforward. I actually read Hamlet. I read Hamlet in high school. by the way, I saw my son's reading list for next year for his freshman year, and there are like a whole bunch of books. I have not read any of them, and I'm not going to tell you what they are because it's so embarrassing.
You've read books that for the first time that he's read in the past.
Yes, I'm doing
right?
that. So I read the Iliad.
Read
the Iliad.
Right, yeah.
And he's already finished To Kill a Mockingbird. You were right, Sonny. I didn't finish it yet. I'm way behind on To Kill a Mockingbird.
So it's a co-education.
It is co-educational. So I'm looking forward.
Learning.
I'm looking forward to it. Yeah.
I just love Vic's journey through, ninth grade honors English.
It's the re-education of Vic Mattis. That's what it's called.
Yeah. It's really amazing.
Of Vic Mattis. Okay. So the plot A. And also, by the way, when in doubt...
Georgetown man.
Thank you. That's right.
Who makes his living off the written word. let us remind
the whole thing is the whole thing is a scam. Okay, a sham.
Writing is bullshit. It's reading bullshit.
It's the biggest secret of all. So when in doubt, whenever I'm watching, it's like, what the heck is happening over here? And it's like totally, you know, trippy. Well, yes, you can blame it on the henbane. The henbane, that's what they drink, right? That's what the Vikings drink. It's made from these various plants, sure, like mandrake and different things. It's very Harry Potter-like. So I think that's where the Vikings stole it from. They stole it from Harry Potter. But what's the name of the school? What is the school that does all the plants and stuff like that?
Oh, I'm not a big Harry Potter guy.
Oh, really?
JVL's much more.
That's JVL, and I'm sure
my wife would know Harry Potter. But you know, I only read through the first three books. I could never get through the fourth book. I watched all the movies, but I don't know the trivia.
I think it maybe it's Hufflepuff. Okay, so anyway, that plot is an A. Duration is a D. That was a long one.
It's long.
Okay,
it's not a long movie.
Necessarily F because. It's a little over 2 hours, and I was mostly entertained throughout. The action and violence gets the very rare A++++. And for one of the, that's one reason. The other reason, it was completely gratuitous, but the guard that walks inside at the end, and he's holding in his intestines, and they just spill out. And I'm like, wow, how did the sword do that? He must have dug it in and then swirled it around. And
you
then
just,
took
you just
it
cut
out.
Across, and then you know, it just, like, your intestines are really—they're all coiled up in there. It's like there's not, there's not a lot of
it.
Space.
It's
so
lot,
once
you know,
once you cut, the bloop.
And you know what they say, you know, you stretch out your intestines, that goes on for
it's
miles.
It's like around the moon.
Yeah, around the moon. It's around the moon, right? If you can't like the small, oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Okay. And sex
it's
nudity.
Like, it's like opening up a can of silly string and just whoop.
Just
goes over.
Yes.
Like the snakes.
Just like,
the snakes in a can.
Remember the Hannibal movie and the detective? Who gets
and there's
gutted
some of that in
Venice.
Kill Bill, isn't there too? Some samurai scenes, some disemboweling where you see the innards fly.
That's right. Yeah. So, and the sex and nudity is an interesting grade. It's an interesting grade because it's a B. Okay. Hmm. There is sex and there is nudity, but it's too far away.
You just see one butt.
It's very small. Well, I see hers. That's close up. But everything else is at a distance, and I'm like, I'm squinting. I'm like, what is happening?
Getting your binoculars out.
Oh, like there was a woman who was sacrificed, and she's upside down, and yeah, and I was, sorry, what?
Are you going to buy this movie so you can watch it on your laptop and zoom in?
And I can zoom in. I said, now I see what's happening. No, I really was squinting, so it gets a B.
Wait, who is the woman who was sacrificed upside down?
You know when they find out, it's like payback and all the, you know, like, so the woman who was supposed to be sacrificed, she gets to live because of all the other violence that's going on outside, and then they open the door, and there's a woman, and there's like two bodies, and it's hard to figure out what's going on. Yeah. So.
Well, it was those two soldiers who had been put together like a horse.
Well, that was in the beginning. Kind of. Outside.
No, that was.
Anyway. The one I'm talking about, that was a woman upside down.
Okay. I don't remember that.
What is the name of the actress, the lead ad, the female?
Anya Taylor-Joy.
Yes. And that's full frontal, but it's the thing that we're in mixed company. We're in mixed company. I can't describe what happens. She throws that thing in his face. I'm like, oh, that's lovely. Okay.
Her blood.
Yeah, you get demerits for the blood, okay? Demerits.
You don't want that. No. You're just like Fjolnir. You're disgusted. You're just...
Fjolnir.
Yes. She's not... Yeah. She's not clean for you.
That's right. She has the hair of a Valkyrie, as they say. Okay. I was fascinated. I love historical stuff like this because I'll spend... And I've had this conversation on the shows before. I watch a movie and then I'll spend the rest of my time trying to piece together what is happening in the world and where are we when this is happening. And I find it fascinating. I don't know a lot about Viking culture and the Viking era. It takes place, Matt, in 985 AD. And it is a reminder that there were worse times to be born in.
No, for absolutely. I'm just gonna...
You know, everyone says, "Oh, this is the worst. This is the worst." Oh. I get it.
But you're not a Viking buff, Vic. You don't watch the Viking show.
No, I know our friend Mike Goldfarb is a big fan, and I think it does very well on those quadrants. But no, and where is that on? Is that like a a Showtime show?
I think it was an AMC show, and then it moved to Netflix.
Oh, I thought it was on like the History Channel.
Or maybe it was History Channel.
Yeah, I thought there might be some competing ones, but no, I wasn't. So most of my knowledge comes from playing the Vikings on Civilization. So I was, when I saw I recognized the berserkers because they had the, you know, they're holding two axes. I said, holy shit. I said, this is going to happen. And boy, did they go berserk.
Did you like the part at the end of that battle where they put all the children and old women into the house and then burned it down?
It is something.
And we're dancing around and cheering.
It is
like,
a reminder. It is a reminder that that savagery has been with us for thousands of years, and that particular form of savagery has been done for a very long time, up to the present.
Yeah. Right. Remember Jason Isaacs in The Patriot, the historical docudrama The Patriot.
Yes. Thank you. Yes, that's right, Lord Tavington. But I do have complaints. One, subtitles. I need more subtitles. Yeah. When they're speaking English, I need subtitles.
I wanted to ask you, it had a very Christopher Nolan problem in that I had trouble understanding most of the dialogue.
And I wondered, is it partly because they want to speak in the language of the time? I get that. Well, they don't want to have like a modern conversation like we're having because it would seem weird. And everyone's saying this is the most accurate depiction of the Vikings ever on film. I actually did not mind when they went back and forth between Old Norse and our English because, you know, I like it. It's cool. Again, it's foreign. It's something completely different from what we've been watching. And it's just, you know, the same movies we see all the time. And so it's like, oh, here's something completely different. Customs, completely foreign. Practices, religion, everything was really, really interesting. I liked it. I had a thought, which was, would it have been, because you talk about Skarsgård and, you know, his acting and everything else, would it have been too on the nose if they cast Chris Hemsworth in this role?
Would have been funny.
It would have, you know, it would have been weird. Okay.
But he wouldn't want to do that, right? I mean, he wouldn't want to be this berserker.
He's funny, man.
He's now he's like, you know, America's golden boy, even though he's Australian.
Yeah,
and think it's you know, he doesn't want to get down and dirty like this, does he?
He wants to make comedies. He's very funny. Right. He thinks he's
and he
is
can
very
do comedy.
Funny.
He can
is very
do comedy.
Funny.
He can do comedy. So the other thing is, and I thought the final battle was actually anticlimactic for me. They're fighting in the lava, you know, the son, the uncle and the nephew. It's okay, and it looked a little fake.
Definitely some.
Well, so I'm just coming again. I'm coming in blind, but isn't this a Revenge of the Sith reference? I mean, isn't that the iconic battle in lava? Like,
lava.
You can't beat that, right?
Yeah. That's right. And in fact, right before the uncle dies, he said, "You were the chosen one," and then he got his head cut off. So,
but then, what does Fjolnir say? If you're not with me, you're against me.
You know, we all know that's how they. That's how those people speak. That's how they speak. there's CGI there, but I like to think that. They filmed on location. I'll be so disappointed if you tell me it was all CGI, because I'd like to think they filmed on location in Iceland. It was beautiful.
Well, I don't know. I think they filmed some of it on location in Iceland. I think most of the film was actually shot in Ireland, is my understanding.
Okay.
The farm, all the stuff at the farm, I think, was so basically the last half of the film, not including, I suppose, the volcano fight. But
it was quite beautiful.
That was shot.
I'm sorry JVL isn't here because, you know, he actually went, he's been to Iceland and he would have been able to tell us about, you know, those hot baths, the spas, you know, those natural pools of water where you can just hang out there with women. What I needed, I think, ultimately in the end was a map because I want to know what direction we're going in here. Were they in Greenland? Were they even further out west? And they go to Iceland. Also, when they raid the village... In that horrifying pillaging scene, right? They raid the village. Who were the people protecting the village? They looked like Huns, you know? And I'm like, it can't be. There was no crossover, but they looked like them with the bows. It was really interesting. I tried searching. The internet could not find.
Well, they were, I want to say they were like Russian, right? They were the Rus.
Yeah, they look. Maybe they could have been Tatars.
I don't know.
I don't know.
So the movie does not hold your hand at all. So the Northman does not hold your hand at all. You're thrown into the deep water and you go with it. You sink or swim, which I admire in certain ways. And I think works better with The Witch than it does here, because that is a more contained movie. I mean, it takes place almost entirely in one on like one little farmhouse in New England. There is a lot. There's just a lot going on. And the dialogue that they, so they actually, they did some test screenings and people were like, what the fuck is happening in this movie? So they added, they added expository dialogue that they then dubbed in. But they had to do it in such a way that it, I mean, first off, it's hard. It was hard for me to understand anything that was being said in the movie anyway, because of the accents, but the, but on top of that, they had to like write the lines of dialogue to match the things that they were dubbing over. Which leads to very weird, like, all right, it has to be five syllables, second syllable has to be an L sound, last syllable has to be a T sound. I mean, it's like, it was a nightmare. So,
okay.
I don't know.
Yeah, I am, I, again, and I'm firmly, you know, it was a reminder of how awful things were at, when the, when Rome fell. And sort of this, that, not that there was much interaction at that point because they're so far up north, but man, the only thing that I thought they brought to the table were the longships. That they could do well, the Vikings. Longships, very impressive. But man, other than
that. Are you just talking about Civ again?
Yeah, I am.
I mean, are the longships in the movie?
Yes.
Oh,
yeah. Well, that's cool. And that's impressive. But other than that, they're savages. So, okay. Do you have any other thoughts, Sonny?
No, I'm glad you liked it.
I did. So, you know, I hope I like the next one. Otherwise, well, that's it.
We got one more week of Vic.
I'm handing one more week of Vic. Thank God. Matt, I'm sorry. We have a few minutes left. You've been through this. You've been through this routine on radio shows and TV. Well, we only have a few seconds left, really quickly. What's your take on The Batman? You did not like it. You saw it. That you went to the theater to see. Oh, no, you saw it on TV.
No, I only saw it once. You know, what's one of the HBO features Max? Of the new house is a movie room. So I have my movie room now.
I'm not that far from you.
You know, this is still not complete, Vic, I have my television for the movie room.
Did you buy a new TV?
Oh, yeah.
What'd you get?
I got a big one. And... the recliners I bought are not there yet.
Oh,
so I'm sitting on like a, you know, one of my kids' chairs in my movie room, watching The Batman on my really big TV, and no one was having fun in that movie.
That's a good way to put it.
The only person who was coming close to having fun was Colin Farrell as
Colin Farrell's great.
He was my favorite part of the movie. And I could deal with emo Batman. I kind of like Robert Pattinson. I liked him in Tenet, a movie that I actually overall didn't really care for.
Also hard to understand.
Yeah, same in this audibly, movie. I liked Pattinson, but I didn't like the movie overall.
It was very emo.
But it just kind of just, it was just glum and long. And speaking about long, so length, it was so long that I couldn't finish it in one night. I had to break it up into two. And then I just, you know, we only have a few minutes left. I will say, I think one of the key problems of the Batman is Paul Dano.
Oh, I was going to ask you about him.
I don't like his Riddler at all.
No.
And I especially don't like how he suddenly raises his voice.
Oh, and into
and
falsetto.
Into
falsetto, too.
Or sometimes
falsetto,
yeah,
and he's singing Ave Maria. And
yeah, what's that?
I don't know why it is.
It was a Catholic orphanage.
It wasn't
the same. So it made me really worried about this sequel.
Paul Dano's Joker, you mean, not the Riddler. Paul Dano's.
No, I'm talking
because it's like Heath Ledger's Joker. It's the same exact character.
Same character.
With all this.
No,
plans,
so here's the key. Here's the key. And this, I was thinking about this. Heath Ledger's Joker and Jack Nicholson's Joker were both having fun. Even though Heath Ledger's Joker is this nihilist terrorist, he's still having fun while he's doing this. And like for me, the emblematic image of The Dark Knight is that scene after Heath Ledger escapes from the Gotham PD, and he's like in the back of the police car, and his head is out the window because he's the dog, as he said earlier. I'm like the dog who's going to catch the car, wouldn't know what to do with it. And there's this evil joy that's going on there that's completely missing from Paul Dano and like his replay of Seven. You know, I mean, it's just
yes.
And then it made me concerned about the inevitable sequel to this movie too, because they set up this Barry Keoghan actor as the Joker, and his Joker just seems just kind of
no. pass.
You know, like, come on. The key to these villains is there's some charisma. Even Tom Hardy's Bane had that, I think, in The Dark Knight Rises, where, you know, it's like he kind of got the joke. Like, the voice is kind of a joke, you know, but it works. And so it was just missing fun.
One of our big complaints on the show, Matt, was that the second, or what do you want to call it? I guess the third act, the plot at Madison Square Garden with the shootout and then the flooding seemed completely unrelated to the movie. And it just happens.
They don't set up the plan at all. No, they don't even have a shot of like the cars. It's all of a sudden, it's like, I set up these things and I'm talking really loud. And it's like, hold it, what's happening here?
Yeah.
And even though I thought the action was pretty good in that scene,
yeah,
it was like still, I was like, what? Please,
it's two different movies. I wish it ended at the diner when they arrested him, and that's it. I would have been happy if the last thing you see is
three
his coffee cup with a question mark. Okay, good, I'm leaving. That's it, we're done.
Yeah,
or
three
or,
endings. He said.
I mean, the problem with that ending is that it's not only that it's completely unconnected to anything else in the plot; it's completely unconnected to anything else thematically. So, like, if the whole thing had been set up where you have the savior mayor who's gonna come in, she's gonna, you know, she's the future of the city, right? The AOC figure, right? That, okay, fine. Then she has to turn out to be just as corrupt as everybody else. Like, for that last sequence to work, she has to be as corrupt as everybody else, and like her saving the city has to be a false promise. And that is why the insane murder of everybody at the Madison Square Garden happens, right? Like, it's you know. But instead, it's just like, nah, we're going to... Paul Dano, who has only, up to this point, killed people who have done bad things and who have been,
some now,
you know,
now gonna
wicked
go after.
Or done bad things against the city, right? Instead, he's just like, yeah, we're going to kill everybody for fun. Because it doesn't make any sense.
It makes no sense. Okay. No. Spirit of the Week. Matt, you drinking anything right now?
I wish I could have refilled my glass about 20 minutes ago. Yeah, I was drinking Bloom Gin, I think.
Ooh. Wow, and
tonic
gin.
Oh, nice, very nice.
I'm a gin drinker.
Yeah, Bloom. Yeah, of course. Very nice. All right. Corrections, shout outs, anything? We're good. All right. That is all the time we're giving to this episode. Questions, comments, compliments, tweet us at SundayBunch, @Victorina Mattis. Are you at Continetti? Is that it? At Continetti.
Yeah.
The one and only.
Yeah.
Again, be sure to subscribe to us on Patreon. Just so go to subbeacon.com. We are there. Tell your friends. Until next time. Okay, so I do have a quick question for you. When you go to the movie theater, if you have a choice of where to sit, where do you sit now?
Where do I sit?
Both of you, yeah. What do you like to say?
I mostly just try to stay away from other people. That's like...
Yeah.
So it doesn't matter where, as long as you're away from people.
I like to sit on the aisle so I can, like, if I have to go to the bathroom, I can just run out and come right back. But
I like being near the center, near the middle of the theater. Yeah, I like having a good view of the screen.
I used to feel that way, and then now it was like I want to be towards the aisle so I can just make a quick getaway. And now, you know what I do? I choose the handicap chairs in the back. And they say when you click it on, because they're the very last scene, there's nobody, there's lots of space around you.
You can't do that.
There's lots of space, right? And they say, you have chosen a special seat. They don't say handicap seat. They don't say that, right? But they say you have chosen a special seat. If they are taken, we cannot guarantee. Like, somehow they know on my AMC profile that I don't have any problems, I guess. But they say, if they are taken, we cannot guarantee you we'll have another seat. And I say, yes, I'm fine if I have to move, right? So I always sit there. Because
hold on. So you're saying the disabled people don't need to reserve that seat?
They just show up and go there. Yes, I believe so. I believe so. I think they still have to pay, but
because
they have
kind of what
preference.
You're doing superficially is the equivalent of parking in a handicap spot.
You're using the handicap stall in the bathroom.
It's far worse than that.
But there's nobody there.
Handicap
just like
stall.
Those handicap spaces, nobody uses that. So it drives me crazy. And so I'm using them. Omni's in because I'm sitting in the back that I can make a quick getaway, and there's nobody around, and nobody's there in the theater. Nobody's in the theater anyway. So, much to my surprise, I'm watching The Northman. Some guy said, I said, that's my move. How dare you pick my, do my thing, because
he's
I like
able,
to do that.
He's an able-bodied person as well.
Well, I assume he is, and then the light came on. He was missing a leg.
So you were sitting in the one-legged man's chair. Yeah, I'm sure that's fine.